Welcome to another episode of the Flagrant 2 podcast on CBS Sports. I am Reed Forgrave. Bill Ryder is still, like, kind of barely alive. Feeling for the guy. He's got some nasty, nasty-ass cold. I was struggling last week, guys. But, you know, I did show up. Producer Joey, do you even give me props for showing up?
I'll give you props for showing up. I think I might be coming down with whatever it is, too. I woke up this morning feeling a little bit rough. But I'm here,
dude.
I'm here.
You and Kevin love both, man.
I know.
It's brutal. It is going around, man. It is absolutely brutal. For me, it's the change of seasons. It's been snowing here in Minnesota for 2 weeks. I made the choice to live here, so don't feel that bad for me. But
can I ask, is there ever a time where it's not going around? I feel like every time somebody gets sick, somebody says,
no,
that's
it's
going
just,
around.
It's just like every time that you talk about it, it's always going around, right?
Yeah,
like,
it's always going around.
Yeah, it is. But like, to be fair, Bill has been doing like 4 hours of radio every night,
yeah.
And his voice is shot. So, you know, hopefully our $1 million duck will be back next week. We got some big, big NBA news today, and frankly, from over the weekend. Eric Bledsoe this morning. We're recording this on Tuesday morning. He just got traded. He didn't want to be there. He let his feelings be known, and the Suns were able to unload him to the Milwaukee Bucks. The other big news of the weekend, Cleveland Cavaliers, the most yin and yang team in the NBA, really struggling, and yet LeBron dropping, what was it, 57 points?
Yeah, it was
56 points back on Friday night?
Yep.
He looked absolutely unreal. But guys, before we get into that, please subscribe, download, rate, review our podcast on iTunes or on Stitcher, on TuneIn. Joey, there's like a million other ways to get it. I don't even know what all of them are. But please find all the ways to get it. We're about a month and a half into this podcast. We're really enjoying it. We hope you are enjoying it, too. I know one person who should be enjoying it, and that's Lance Stephenson, Joey. We are going to get him into the All-Star game, not just into the All-Star game. He's going to be a captain for the East team. Hashtag Operation Born Ready All-Stars. Let's all send Lance to the All-Star game. So today's big news, and we're going to have a great guest on later today. Rajah Bell is coming on shortly. Used to play for the Suns. Used to be in the front office for the Cavs. So these are two teams that are near and dear. At least you hope they're still dear to his heart. He's going to give us some special insight on this Bledsoe trade and on these Cleveland Cavaliers struggling. This Bledsoe trade, Joey, this is interesting to me. I love the trade for the Bucks. They're giving up Greg Monroe on an expiring contract. Greg Monroe, like, solid post player, right? Kind of an old school NBA guy. I'm not sure. He certainly doesn't fit into the Bucks' future. And if they are going for it this year, which it appears that they are, I don't think he fits into the Bucks' present. They're giving up him, a future first rounder, and a future second rounder is the report from Adrian Wojnarowski this morning. I love this trade for the Bucks. I think the Suns got a decent return. We'll see where that first rounder lands. That's really the jewel of this trade. But it's not like they're getting the Cavs Nets pick. They're not getting some absolute stud in return here. They're getting something that's serviceable. And I think, frankly, Eric Bledsoe tanked the Suns' chances at getting a great haul from him. I like this trade for the Bucks a lot. You're getting a guy in Eric Bledsoe. Look, they've been trotting out some pretty suspect players. When Rashad Vaughn is getting playing time for your supposed top four seed playoff team, that's a problem. When Matthew Dellavedova is considered like a not just a rotation player, but like a get a lot of minutes type rotation player, that's not a great thing for your team. Eric Bledsoe, you're bringing a guy who is one of the best perimeter defenders in the NBA, I would say. At least at his best he is when he's not injured. When he's trying completely. Eric Bledsoe, look, is he the greatest shooter in the NBA? No. But I think you can count on him for making 35% of threes. I think his highest three-point percentage was creeping up on 40%. That's what the Bucks want. You want great perimeter defense. You want a guy who can switch, who can play both positions in the backcourt. To be able to have him and Malcolm Brogdon in the same backcourt, Joey, look, I get that this is not necessarily like you're getting an all-star. But this strikes me as a great trade for the Bucks, and this says, you know, they're not planning for the future. They're going for it right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head with two things. One, the depth. DeAndre Liggins, another guy that I've seen has been getting minutes for them this year. I mean, when you're playing guys like that in your backcourt off your bench, that's a struggle. They they've struggled a little bit with depth this year without Jabari. And then the other thing, him and Brogdon in the backcourt, that's a tough – it's a tough defensive backcourt, and it's two guys who can both play on or off the ball who are – Brogdon's a good shooter. Bledsoe's a capable shooter. I think it's the right move for them. If he and you're getting a guy who's disgruntled, who wanted out, so now he's looking to sort of, you know, reclaim, you know,
in theory, Eric Bledsoe will be rejuvenated. He's playing on one of the most exciting young teams in the NBA with the most exciting young star in the NBA with Giannis. I like this a lot. Am I going to put them in the Eastern Conference Finals? No, but I think I'd say that this gives them a puncher's chance at least. The other big news in the NBA, and we will get into all this shortly with Raja Bell, the Cleveland Cavaliers. What the hell, man? This team, I cannot get a beat on them. I'm going to read off just a bunch of statistics about the Cavs and their struggles. They've lost 5 of 6 on Friday night. You may recall LeBron James was an absolute superstar. Even more so, he was more superhero than superstar. He scored 57 points. Cavs beat the Wizards. Clearly, this was a revenge game or a statement game for LeBron. But here's the deal. Then they go and lose to the Atlanta Hawks 2 days later. This team confuses me so much. After that Atlanta Hawks game, Dwayne Wade calls out the starting lineup. He comes out, and this is what Dwayne Wade had to say.
It's no secret we're starting games off awful, terrible. And, they got it going early, and the effort, the focus just wasn't there, you know, to start it off. And, you know, you're trying to battle back. You waste a lot of energy trying to come back from 16, 18 down. It's tough nightly to do that. So, you know, and we all know this. There's no secret in this locker room, but our first unit, we got to start off better. We got to, you know. I won one time for the first unit just to get on the second unit because we blew a lead. I'm waiting for that day to happen. We definitely got to start off better, man. You know, I know it's a long season and you got time to correct it, but you don't want to be losing these games right here. Team that come in 1-8. It's like if a team right now, they got go-to players, we can play. We know what we're doing. If they ain't got go-to players and they just playing freelance basketball, we're in trouble. And they're tearing us up. So we definitely got to figure it out because there's going to be a lot of teams we play.
Look, man, it's one thing when you were having to come back from 19 points down to like the Golden State Warriors or the Boston Celtics. Like, hey, man, a lot of people get down 19 to those teams. It's a whole different ballgame when you were down 19 to the Atlanta Hawks and have to furiously come back only to lose in the end. That is not a good sign for these Cleveland Cavaliers. They are dead last in the NBA in defensive rating. They are allowing 113.4 points per game. That's good for 28th in the league. They're 30th in opponent three-point percentage, not defending the perimeter. They're allowing 41.7% three-point shooting, 27th in opponent turnovers. They are not turning people over. This defense is absolutely horrendous. And here's the other thing. They're not in the three ball. We're used to this team hitting threes. They're 24th in the league in three-point shooting. J.R. Smith has by far the lowest three-point shooting percentage in his career. He's shooting 23% from three, averaging 5 points per game. Kevin Love struggling from three. Jay Crowder struggling from three. Derrick Rose, career-low points per game. LeBron's still LeBron. The King's still the King. We're going to go into this with Raja Bell, but everyone else but LeBron is really, really struggling on this team, with the exception of perhaps Kyle Korver. The two numbers that I want to throw out to you, Joey, about this Cleveland Cavaliers team tells us, I think, the yin and the yang of this team. One is, and we brought this up last week on the podcast, they are the oldest team in the NBA. Average roster age, 30.1 years old. They're not going to get any younger throughout the season. The other one that tells the yang about this team, look, they're 4-6. They're clearly struggling. You know how they are against certain playoffs teams? They're 3-0. They beat the Wizards. They beat the Bucks. They beat the Celtics. So clearly, they can still rise to the occasion. I'm curious where Raja thinks of them going in to, sort of a pretty important stretch for this team. But before we get to Raja Bell, I want to tell you about an app I have on my phone. It's something called SeatGeek. Look, buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated, but there is a better, simpler way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is so awesome that I have to take a drink of my tea to calm my throat while talking about it. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just two taps on your phone from wherever you are. Sometimes you can even do it from your car. I wouldn't recommend it. I do it from my house. But SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or your favorite musician in person. And SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. I went and got tickets to Arcade Fire last weekend, got floor seats at a great price on SeatGeek. SeatGeek is a pretty great app. I have it on my phone. It is the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere with just a few taps. I can instantly find tickets. Saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices, find amazing deals, and get you the most bang for your buck. SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Best of all, our listeners, you, the listeners of the Flagrant 2 podcast, get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code Flagrant today. That's promo code Flagrant for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Okay, guys, let's get to Roger Bell and his insights on the Eric Bledsoe trade and the struggles of the up and down Cleveland Cavaliers. And we welcome in 12-year NBA veteran Raja Bell. Raja, you played for the Suns. You were in the front office for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Your old teams are making some good news, making some bad news these days.
Yeah, I mean, really, dude, we're a month into the season, and there's so much stuff going on, I can barely keep up. So, like, if the rest of the year plays out like this, where do we wind up?
Yeah, completely upside down like we are right now. So the Suns, after... I don't even know if you call it a trade request. We'll just call it a I don't want to be here request. End up trading Eric Bledsoe to the Milwaukee Bucks for Greg Monroe, a protected first rounder, and a second round pick. What do you think of this trade? Who wins this trade?
The way it played out in Phoenix, like, I don't know how they could win in the trade. Like, clearly, in my opinion, I think, you know, Milwaukee, for a lot of reasons. Number one, I think they're closer to what they want to be as a team and probably as a franchise right now than Phoenix is. They got a nice young roster, some good pieces that fit together. And what they were missing, in my opinion, was a floor general. And yeah, Giannis can play that point forward. He's as good as anyone in the league. But you do need a guy who can control and run your team when push comes to shove. You don't want it to always have to be Giannis. And so, you know, Eric Bledsoe fits that bill for them. You know, Phoenix... My question with Phoenix is, like, where are you going? And I guess, you know, when Eric Bledsoe is giving you glimpses into what's going on there with his tweets, as unprofessional as that is, I think it kind of solidifies for me what I'm thinking from the outside looking in, is that that's just a mess and there's no real direction there. Like, there are a lot of pieces that they're accumulating. They you know, the Tyson Chandler deal doesn't necessarily fit. The Jared Dudley deal. I get it. You're bringing back guys and players that you want to drop into this young locker room for a little bit of leadership and stuff like that. But right, there's no real chemistry there, right? The roster isn't built with really good chemistry. So for a lot of reasons, I'm going to say Milwaukee.
Do you like Devin Booker? Do you think Devin Booker is going to be a franchise piece for the Suns? I know he's a pretty divisive player.
Yeah, I do. I really like Devin Booker. I think he's a really, really good young guard. He can score on all levels. He's got a nice post game. He can get to the rack. He's got a nice jump shot. But, you know, you've got to put pieces around him right now that complement him, guys that can help him get shots. And they've got a bunch of young players that get buckets, but they all seem to be kind of similar pieces. Not again, like, I just don't see the continuity in the actual roster.
Yeah, it does. It seems like a team kind of without an identity, whereas the Bucks really, I feel like they have, around Giannis, really developed an identity. Where they were struggling on this year was on defense. I think they're like 26th in defensive efficiency. Does Bledsoe, I mean, I know there's the floor general issue that you were speaking about. What about defensively? Do you think that he fits right into what they're trying to do on defense?
I think he does. He's a big guard. I mean, what I always thought, and, you know, they were a little disappointed for me last year because, like, I want to say it was not last season, but the season before that, they were a really good defensive team. Like, they were long. They switched. And I could be wrong. It could have been 3 years ago. when I was in Cleveland. They gave us Fitz because they were just so low and they could switch everything. It seemed like they had bought in defensively, and then, you know, there was this backslide, and it's why they didn't, you know, it's why they weren't taking those next steps as a young franchise that was on the verge of taking those next steps. It has been disappointing this year to see them, you know, not be locked in the way they should be. I think Eric Bledsoe fits with what they have. He's a big guard. He can switch a lot of things. You know, it makes sense for them, but he's not going to solve your problems defensively. That's an internal issue. That's something that has to be part of what you preach culture-wise on a day-to-day basis. Guys have to be bought into that. So, you know, he's not going to come in and change the culture. It's not, you know, his calling card, so to speak, but he will fit with what they want to do defensively.
Were you surprised that they did not have to give up a more foundational piece like a Malcolm Brogdon or a Thonmaker, even like a Tony Snell?
No, not after the way it went down in Phoenix. Like, again, like, I probably should have said that when I said, I don't know how Phoenix wins. Like, you had to take whatever you could get at this point for Eric Bledsoe. Once that goes down the way it played out in the media, if I'm a rival GM or another club, like, I'm going to give you as little as I can give you for a piece that I know doesn't fit with your organization anymore. And you could put the blame on Eric Bledsoe. That was highly unprofessional. But then I would also put some blame on the front office there with getting into a war of words through the media with their player. Like, you keep that in house if you can. Like, two wrongs don't make a right in that regard, and you weren't going to be able to get anything. You lost all your leverage.
Man, I was in an IKEA this past weekend, my wife and two kids, and I was feeling Eric Bledsoe's pain of being in a hair salon. Like, poor guy, right? He was stuck, right? What do you, if you had to guess right now, let's assume no injuries. Let's assume Eric Bledsoe makes it through this season healthy. Where do you see the Bucks in the playoff race come April?
Let's see. I think that the Bucks should be a 4-5 seed in the East. I think Cleveland's a mess right now, but whenever you have LeBron and that, you know, you got T. Lou and the accumulation of talent that they have, they're going to be right up there. I'm really, really, really impressed with Boston and what they do. And Brad Stevens always keeps them, you know, in the mix. So they'll be up there. I like, you know, Washington and Toronto. They got pedigree. So those four slots, I think, are filled up. But after that, I think it's wide open. And so I think the Bucks, on paper, with what they've got, should be vying for one of the four spots, like the four. But I have them at 5. You know, that's where they should be in my mind.
Yeah, that sounds about right. If you're going forward with the Bucks, obviously you're hoping all these young guys keep developing. What do you think that team is missing right now? What do you think this team is missing? What piece are they missing going forward to be that like elite level team in the East?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think they filled one of the major holes that I saw. I mean, Delly is as good a backup PG as there is in the league. I love Delly. Delly was a guy when I was in Cleveland that, you know, I was a doubter. I was like, it just doesn't look like it should be that good, right? He just doesn't look like he should do that, but he does it and he wins. And so you had your backup in place. You needed a starting lead guard. You got that. You know, the NBA is, I'd like to say, like a big that can get down there and really protect the rim, but they're so long that I don't think that's the issue. You know, I don't know. Maybe another playmaker, but Chris Middleton, look, I like them. I think they're,
yeah, so
I think
do I.
They have all the pieces. They just got to grow. They're still kind of young, if you will. I think they just need to mature, and the point guard position now being filled, if that piece works chemistry wise, that they're set up to go.
So we're talking about teams in the East, and their ceilings, and, which transitions us to the, I think, the most confusing team in the NBA, the Cleveland Cavaliers. How can you not destroy the Wizards, but look your absolute best one night, and then two nights later just look like a complete disaster against, I think, the worst team in the NBA, or at least one of the worst three teams in the NBA, and the Atlanta Hawks? How does that even happen? What do you diagnose as the problem with this team?
Defense is the problem. Like, that, sure. That is, you know, I know everybody and their mother's saying it, but like, you can't give up. I mean, they're giving up 117 points a game over their last 8 games. That's ridiculous. I know you're an offensive juggernaut with all the weapons that you have there when everything's rolling and the ball's moving, which is a whole nother issue. But when you're doing that, you can score with the best, but you can't give up the type of buckets that they're giving up, right? 117 hard earned, like you're making, pulling, you know, shots out of your butt type of shots, fine, but not 117 of, you know, balls on the strong side. We make a pass and a cut and we're hitting a cutter for a layup and there's no weak side presence at the rim. Like those are, you know, that's basic level. My fifth grade team knows weak side has to be in the paint to take away, you know, that stuff that they shouldn't be doing. And it just speaks to, like, you know, there just seems to be a little funk around the team right now. But the one thing that I could point to on the court is defense. The funk, I don't know what it is because I'm not there, so I can't speak to it, but there's something funky there.
Do you think the defense is simply an effort question? Do you think it is a focus question? Do you think it is that they're conserving themselves, that this is almost like a conscious decision? Or no. Is it just that they're old?
I think age kind of plays into that a little bit. Like, it's a little harder to move when you're older naturally, but I don't think they're that old. I mean, they are older, but I think that defense is just them not being locked in. I don't think it's a schematic thing. I've seen T. Lou and I've watched him work on defense when I was there. It's not something that's lacking in that regard. I think it's a lack of focus. And it's just, you know, attention. It's just a lack of focus and attention to detail. Like, and when you combine those two things with a lack of effort, I mean, you roll out some pretty bad defensive performances. So that the three of those together are just like it's a mess.
You're a T. Lou fan. Do you think if they're hovering at 500 at, you know, when the new year comes, that these, you know, chirpers are going to be chirping even more loudly about his job?
I'm sure they will be. I don't know.
Do you think they should be? I guess is probably the better question.
I don't know. I don't believe that. I don't think they should be. T. Lou has a really good rapport with those guys.
Yeah.
You know, I like some of the stuff that T. Lou does. I think he's a really good coach. I think, you know, you took a job that was arguably like the hardest to manage. And T. Lou made the comment, he got roasted last year, that his job was the hardest in the league. We could debate that. But in terms of managing personalities, he was handed one of the hardest jobs in the league. And you got Kevin Love and Kyrie and LeBron and JR. I mean, that's a lot of personality, right? You drop D. Wade into that mix, D. Rose into that mix, Isaiah Thomas into that mix, like it's a combustible situation. Not that it has to explode, but it is combustible. And so, you know, I don't blame T. Lou solely for that. Sure, he's the coach, but I don't know that he should lose his job. That may take them a while. It may take him a while to figure out how to make all that work together.
Wait, you brought this up when you came on the podcast a month or so ago, that you said that D. Wade could become a problem. I think you said if he doesn't accept his role. Obviously, he called out the starters after that Hawks game. Do you expect this to be something that will combust with D. Wade?
I don't see – like, so – I think D. Wade has done a good job of accepting his role. Like, he came out, they named him the starter. Like, D. Wade doesn't name himself the starter. That was something that that T. Lou and the coaches decided was in the best interest. And, you know, there was a little bit of pushback. And so, you know, D. Wade went back to the bench, and I didn't see D. Wade have any beef with that. So from my perspective, I think he's done what he can do to try to fit in there. I don't see D. Wade as being a problem for them going forward or the reason why it wouldn't work. I think that, you know, some of the relationships that were in existence there with LeBron and different teammates change when you bring a guy like D. Wade in who's so close to LeBron. So, you know, all those minutes after practice that I may spend with LeBron messing around and, you know, getting some extra shots up or just, you know, just shooting the breeze a little bit, they become minutes that he spends with D. Wade now. And over the course of months, like, that can, you know, you could be like, damn, man, that, you know, it could be a resentful thing. And I don't think that's D. Wade's fault, but I think the day-to-day chemistry and relationships on that team change when you introduce his best friend into the mix.
I think it's a great point about T. Lou, the way he got roasted last year. I think you're right. He does have one of the – I mean, look, it's a problem that you'd rather have versus being the coach of the Atlanta Hawks, a team that's tanking. But managing egos ain't easy, man.
No, it's not, man. And that's why I like a guy like T. Lou, because, you know, T. Lou's the type of coach that can go to the front of the plane and play Boomer with the team. Right? Not that that's what he's going to be doing on a night-to-night basis, but when you've got a team that's in a funk, a team that you know, it needs some kind of, you know, it needs some kind of push. Like, it may not be an on the court push. It may be a social push. It may be something like, let's do this together and let's bond a little bit type of push. And Tulu's the type of coach that can do that. He's got equity with the players. Like, he's cool. So, you know, he's the type of guy that could get them out of that. But golly, that's a lot of stuff going on there at Cleveland.
To me, the brightest spot for this team is the fact that, look, they're 4-6, but they're 3-0 against certain playoff teams in the East. The Wizards beat the Bucks, beat the Celtics. That tells me they can probably turn it on when they need to. Give me your guess. Where do the Cavs finish in the East regular season standings, and do they make the NBA Finals this year?
I'm going to say they finish, I don't know the seven, are they like 4-6 right now?
Yeah, 4-6. They're playing the Bucks tonight, which I think is, you know, still a really interesting matchup.
Good little litmus test, right? Like, what's Boston, 9-2?
Yeah, I think that's right. They've won 8 in a row, I believe.
All right. So, like, they're not out of it yet, but I don't see them turning it around tonight. I mean, they would win tonight, but they're not going to just reverse culture tonight. So I could see Boston taking the one seed and Cleveland pulling in at two, maybe even three. But I don't think when it's all said and done that any of them are beating LeBron and the Cavs in a 7-game series. I don't believe that. I've never been a dude who bought into, like, you can flip the switch and turn it on, until I was around the Cavs that year in the front office when they very literally just flipped the switch and turned it on. So, you know, I won't bet against that. When you have him and you've got, you know, players like that who have been, you know, from top to bottom in big playoff games and finals, they're going to be formidable in the playoffs. But I could see them not getting the number one seed. I could see them coming in two or three in the East.
Well, it wouldn't shock me. I mean, we'll see how this Bledsoe trade turns out, but, like, and this is probably me getting a little bit, like, prisoner of the moment, but, like, Celtics look like the best team, best regular season team in the East. Would not shock me to see the Wizards get number two. Wouldn't shock me to see the Bucks get number three and the Cavs go all the way down to number four and still probably make the finals, which is, I think that's, like, the crazy thing about LeBron is no matter how they do in the regular season, we kind of have gotten to the point where we trust him in the clutch.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, you hit the nail on the head with Milwaukee. Like, I like them at four, but I would not be surprised if they on paper, what they have, they could be easily three if they figure out some of those defensive issues that they have. But I guess my question with that is, like, every year it seems like there's a little less importance put on the regular season by the LeBron teams. And, yeah, he can turn it on. And you know, when put to the fire, I'm not betting against him this year. But when does that start to become, like, when is it not going to be enough? Like, when does it catch up where that regular season just, I can't turn it on the same way? And that's what you're playing. I feel like you're playing with fire because he can do it maybe, but not everyone can do that, you know? And if he's just not good enough, then it costs you. So I really don't love the way they're like, oh, we can just chill through the regular season, it's not a big deal, let's flip the switch. I don't think it's good for, like, the game. It's not good for the ratings. It's not good. And let's be frank, like, I know players don't care, but they should, because the ratings and the TV revenue is what drives these massive paydays now. So, you know, you don't want that regular season product to be just like one's, you know, a product that fans know players don't care about, you know?
Yeah, unless it's a Friday night game where against the Wizards, where you know you can go out and score 57 points if you need to.
Amazing.
A couple more things on the Cavs for you, and then we can let you go. Let's say 2 months from now, this team looks exactly like they look like right now, one of the worst defensive teams in the NBA. Obviously, Isaiah will be brought into the mix at that point, so maybe that's kind of the move that you need to make. But if this team looks exactly the same 2 months from now as they do right now, would you start thinking about making some sort of personnel decisions?
2 months from now, yeah, I would.
Like trade Kevin Love, jettison Derrick Rose. Like, what would be your move? Let's get deep into the hypotheticals.
Yeah, I'm not sure. You know, I don't know that I would move. You know, I don't know that I'm moving Kevin Love. I'm not moving Kevin Love. I'm not moving. LeBron. So if I had to move something, like I'd probably be shopping, and this is just because, you know, without looking at it, I'd be shopping like the Shubs, the JRs. I'd be shopping to see what I could get for that. I don't, you know, Kyle Korver's. I'd be tinkering around those edges. Like I wouldn't be messing with that point guard position. Like there's not a lot.
Yeah.
You got Isaiah, and you got I don't know, bro. That's a tough one.
It's weird because like
that two spot, because you got three twos right now, right?
You
got Shump, JR, and Korver. So like you can't find minutes for all of those dudes anyway. Like I'd be tinkering around, and Jay Crowder. So I'd be messing around somewhere in there, probably.
Oh, it's weird. Like it's almost like the move that they could make in January has almost already been made, because, you know, Isaiah's gonna hopefully be back to his old self and be healthy by then. So it's like you're adding a new piece in the middle of the season that you already know you're gonna have.
It makes you better, like, obviously, like, offensively, if chemistry, you know, like, it is what they expect it to be. Like, sure, he's going to come in and produce points, but, like, I don't see how that really, like, I don't see how that helps you defensively. And not even a slight, like, at Isaiah being able to play defense. But, I mean, like just dropping a new piece in doesn't solve your problems defensively from like, a let's play harder and let's pay more attention to detail. Like, that's stuff that they need to start solving now. And then, you know, if you drop Isaiah in and it's a great fit offensively, like even, you know, even better. But right now they have to start taking, you know, taking some ownership into what's going on.
Well, and what's so weird here, Raja, is that last year, that second half of last season, we saw the Cavs just dog it on defense. And there were all sorts of think pieces written. There were all sorts of concerns, you know, what's going to happen when they get to the playoffs. And obviously they were fine. They made the finals. They were able to turn on when they needed to. Do you think this, and it does seem similar to a year ago, maybe just a little bit more exaggerated, do you think that's something that could get into a team's mentality where, look, you can dog it now, but at some point it's going to seep into your identity come playoff time?
Yeah, I mean, again, I watched them flip a switch the first year I was there. But, like, again, I think every year since then, they've given up a bigger portion of the regular season in terms of like, we don't need to be playing hard yet. You know, like they chill just a little bit more each year. And that is playing with fire in my book. And from a front office perspective, like Kobe Altman, God bless him, man. He's got a, you know, for a first GM job, it's a hell of a gig and a lot of fronts. I would want to know, like if I'm the GM and the coach, I would need to know that we can do it and we can sustain it at least for a while. To not be nervous, right? Like it can't be we're the worst team on defense all the way through the year. And as a GM, I'm just going to trust that we can turn it on. You're going to have to give me some reason to believe, whether it be a month worth of sustained play or, you know, what have you, that we're able to do this. Otherwise, I'm not going to trust that come playoff time, this particular squad is going to be able to turn it on. But if you give him the reason to know that you can do it, you know, maybe he's cool with it and keeps you intact.
Raja, always love having you on. Great insights as always. Let's definitely have you on in like a month or so, where we're either going to talk about like the Cavs having just won 8 in a row, or the Cavs at like gone 1-7. Like this NBA season, I don't get it, man. I just don't get it.
Yeah, man. I appreciate being on, man. Tell Bill I said what's up.
Sounds good, man. Thanks. Producer Joey, I think Raja's one of the best in the business. I will have him on every single podcast if he can make the time for us. I feel like a smarter Cavs follower, but also smarter person after I haven't talked to him.
Yeah, he's the best, man. Like every time we have him on a show, have him on this show or any show that I've worked with him at CBS Sports, you just like, man, he brings up points about the NBA where you're like, man, I didn't think about it that way before, but he did in that one.
What, Isaiah, right?
Yeah.
Isaiah may hurt this team with what they're worst at.
Yeah.
I mean, on defense, which is that's concerning to say the least.
Yeah, I mean, this is what people are waiting on, right? You said you made that point, like you're getting your move, like if you need to make a big move, you're getting your big move when he comes back from injury, but then Raja makes the great point. Their problem is defense.
What is your concern level with the Cavs right now? Are you at like DEFCON 1, which I think is all out nuclear war, or are you like DEFCON whatever? Like, because LeBron's LeBron and the King's still the King until he's not the King.
Yeah, I mean, I can't. I mean, it doesn't look great. But I can't go DEFCON 1 10 games into the season. I definitely don't like what they look like right now, but it's LeBron. So anyway.
Yeah, it is amazing how much we trust. I mean, obviously, there's not a player we've trusted this much. Sorry, Kobe, since Michael Jordan. That when it comes down to it, he's gonna do what it takes to win. This team does seem different this year. I'm really interested in this game tonight, Bucks Cavaliers. I assume the Bucks won't have Bledsoe already, unless he's already on a plane and getting his physical done. Which is too bad, because that is a fit that I can't wait to see. How it's going to fit in Milwaukee. I've said it before. I think obviously it's either them or the Celtics going forward in what, you know, operating assumption post LeBron Eastern Conference next year. I like the Bucks personally, because Giannis is transcendent and they're clearly building around him, building on their strengths. That said, can you imagine this starting five next year when Gordon Hayward is 100%?
Yeah, like Celtics, yeah.
Kyrie looks amazing. Hayward, Tatum, Brown, and Al Horford. Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
That's a ridiculous starting five.
And Stevens. I mean, like,
he's unreal.
He
is worth how many wins a year to that team? Like, what's his warp?
Oh,
like,
I mean,
five?
How many teams that are this young that go through what they went through in the first game of the season would have completely collapsed? Like, They lost their first two games. Now they've won eight or nine in a row. It's just like, I don't think a lot of coaches could handle that.
What did we talk about, Joey? The day after Hayward's injury, I think you and me were both, I'm not sure where Bill was on this, but we were both like, they're done. They're not going to be a top four seed in the East.
Yeah.
They're struggling.
Absolutely.
Brad Stevens, man. Like, frankly, like, second half of that opening game, you could see what he was able to do in the first half. Like, a completely bizarre situation where both teams kind of lost all focus, I guess. And then in the second half, the Celtics came back in that first game of the year. And I think that's what we've seen all this year. Brad Stevens is incredible, man. Yeah. He is incredible.
He's like, watching his teams outside of Pop. I can't give second best in the league to anybody right now other than Brad Stevens. Like, you look at him as like, no matter who
now that Earl Watson's gone.
Right. Well, yeah. Right, but it just seems like whoever you give him, he's gonna make it work.
The dude is absolutely unbelievable. Don't forget to rate us, subscribe to us on iTunes, on Stitcher. Grindr, Joey? Grindr too?
Nope.
No, wait, that's nope. We talked about it in an earlier episode. Bill was getting all his dating websites mixed up, because Bill and I are old married men, and Joey is hitting the New York City dating scene. How's that going, by the way? Good, great, grand, wonderful.
It could be good tonight. Could be good.
Knicks game.
How about a first meeting at a Knicks game? That's pretty big.
Ooh, we need a report tomorrow if she is still around.
If she even exists,
let's have her on the podcast.
We'll see. We haven't actually met, so we'll see.
All right. Good luck, man. We will be back tomorrow, and we'll certainly recap that Cavs-Bucks game. See you guys.